Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm well, Melis. How are you?
Good. A couple of technical difficulties. I mean, the link is weird acting the weird. I mean, the link is acting up. When you go to the link, it says like if you're the host sort of stuff, you know. We're trying to understand why that's happening. Dalit is trying to fix that at the moment. Meanwhile,
Yeah, it does allow you to click through if you follow it through. I know what you mean.
I'm trying to fix that. So give me a moment, please.
Yeah, sure. I'll just be here.
Okay, I think I know how to fix it. All right, I'll mute myself.
Can you tell? Dreamer, and there's so much to say. San Omano, and quicker you're gone. And now you're living every night like a ghost. You won't believe it, but you're better than most. You won't believe it, but you're better than most. Shady on the corner every night and day. You get back up, you're hurting every way. And when you weigh up all the cons and pros, you won't believe it, but you're better than most. Then again, it could turn out what I said is true. Tell me what you wanted to be. You are a dreamer and there's so much to see. Every day you waited, but you're not even close. You won't believe it, but you're better than most. I see you walking like there's rust in your bones. In San Omano, and the quicker you're gone. And now you're living every night like a ghost. You won't believe it, but you're better than most. You won't believe it, but you're better than most. Shady on the corner every night and day. You get back up, you're hurting every way. And when you weigh up all the cons and pros, you won't believe it, but you're better than most. Then again, it could turn out what I said is true. I can't imagine this would matter to you. So won't you take a moment just to suppose? You won't believe it, but you're better than most. You won't believe it, but you're better than most. Hold on to what you know, and we'll see how it goes.
Before you got here, how are you now? Those won't save walls around you, save hearts and sighs. Among loving mothers, the crowing in a home, and there's so many others, it must become their turn.
'Cause it can't be, we can't leave any child. Must make sure they're all alright, they're all our babies, all our babies. Your eyes have come to see them, I've come to feel your soul. I wish my arms could hold you like you were mine too. 'Cause it can't be, we can't leave any child. Must make sure they're all alright, they're all our babies, they're all our babies.
Fallen, they're trapped in the dark, and the world is calling, so is my heart.
'Cause it can't be, we can't leave any child. Must make sure they're all alright, they're all our babies, they're all our babies.
Babies, they are,
they all are.
Let's dream away from here tonight. Just let it go and close your eyes. Leave all your troubles here with me. You'll always know where I will be. Let's dream away and go back home. Don't wanna do this all alone.
Hi, Dennis. How are you? You're on mute. All right. Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah. Hi, I'm really well. Sorry about that.
How are you?
Very well indeed. Thank you, Melis. How are you doing today?
Very good. So I'm super pleased to say we're with Dennis Harhalakis today. He is a certified money coach with over 20 years of banking experience, amazing soul, and we'll be talking to him about employee financial well-being and why it's relevant today. So this will be a different format, very fast-paced, very like, you know, kind of like that. So if you have any questions, drop them in the chat, or else this will be a 30-minute session, and afterwards we'll be publishing this as a podcast. So if you have any objections, of it not being recorded, just mention that in the beginning or stay silent forever. All right. Dennis, very happy to have you here. Where are you at right now? Just out of curiosity.
Well, it's been really interesting. So I'm a money coach. I work with couples. I work with individuals. I do financial well-being seminars. I coach money coaches. And so we are at a really interesting inflection point. I think the last couple of years, and particularly the last 6 months, have brought people's finances to the very, very front of their focus, not just in terms of at an individual level, at a governmental level, and at an employer level. So the last 10 years has seen huge changes in an understanding of mental health at the in the workplace and how to support mental health. And we've seen that swing very much to the financial part of mental health. So it's been really interesting.
So why do you think financial well-being is so important today?
Well, I think it's always been important. It's just that we as a society haven't had a very enlightened debate or understanding of money and how it goes through our lives. So why it's come up right now is because practically everybody has been facing a massive challenge around their finances since COVID started, but in particular in the last 6 months, with the rise in oil, the rise in grain prices, and basically everybody's core needs, which are food, fuel, shelter, are 10, 20, 30% more expensive than they were before. So just to give you an interesting example, in the UK, food inflation in the United Kingdom averaged 2.5% for the last 30 years. That's from 1989 to 2022. The cost of food in the UK increased 13% in August. So it's a massive change. It's not just in itself. I know in Turkey you're used to levels of high inflation, but we've basically gone up from 2.5% for the last 30 years to 13% in 1 month, and it's forecast to go even higher. So that is primarily milk, cheese, eggs, bread, the kind of things that everybody needs every single day. Rents are up 10 to 20% in the UK, across the UK. And of course, we all know the price of fuel is significantly higher. The new rates in the UK for electricity came out in the last couple of days. And I'm feeling really glad that it's only gone up 20% from where it was a couple of months ago. But in total, that is close to three times what it was last year. So finances and numbers and banks, you know, personal finance is right up there in people's in people's vision. And not only that, of course, it's moved into the public debate as well.
Yeah.
So it's certainly something which started in COVID, which was very, very unsettling, because we were uncertain about our future, our health, our security, our finances, all the things that are very, very part of core survival instincts were under threat in COVID. Calmed down a little bit, and then it just ramped up massively.
And what do you think this would mean for employees first, because they're also affected? I mean, everybody's affected by this, and employees as well. And like, what does that mean for employees as well as HR? Like, what kind of problems usually come to HR with during these?
Sure. Time? Well, unfortunately, without meaning to sound too negative, we are now in a situation where in the UK, 11 million people are behind on bills, which is 20% of adults.
Wow.
5 million of them have gone without food to pay for energy bills. Debt, personal debt, has risen by over £1,000 per person. And even before this, financial issues were the biggest cause of divorce and suicide in the Western world. Just to share with you a statistic that I came across recently, in the UK, 100,000 people in problem debt attempt suicide in England each year. Okay. So this is something that is pervasive. It's got a lot worse, and 50% of people feel uncomfortable managing their money. So we've got really a perfect storm around people's finances, people's ability to find to manage their money, people's ability to live in security and to feel safe. And what that means for employers is that large percentages or large numbers of their own employees are under severe financial stress. Now, we don't need to go into it. I think that the results of stress are fairly straightforward, but essentially they lead to increased absence, reduced productivity, and it essentially undermines an employee's ability to do their job well and to show up, as well as stress and elevated levels of cortisol have a massive knock-on effect on people's health, their physical health as well as their mental health. So this is really problematic. And employers are uniquely placed to help employees at this point of their greatest need.
Then my next question is totally leading into that. So how can we actually help employees in the office? Like, I know you have implemented incredible programs across different organizations. Can you tell me a little bit about what you are doing at the moment?
So primarily I give financial well-being talks to employers or to their employees. I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit about a broader strategy for supporting employee well-being. And I think the first place to start is normalizing the discussion about financial well-being. 10 years ago, no one really talked about mental well-being in the office, and we managed to change that quite significantly, where mental well-being, people being at different stages of on their mental health journey or at different levels of mental health, are now feel supported. So the first thing we need to do is normalize the discussion around money and managing finances. Why is it so hard? And the second thing we need to do is normalize what's going on, which is debt and financial stress. So I'm going to tease out a little bit, because I think it's really important that people understand this question around money and finances, and why is managing money so hard, or why can it be so hard? Because there's a number of really good reasons why it's hard. Fundamentally, our brains are not wired for it. Our brains didn't evolve to handle long-term planning. They're wired for short-term gratification and immediate response to danger. So if there's something I want, then the best time to have it is now. And so when you combine that with a culture of consumerism, where we're surrounded by messages that you just need to drive this or wear this or buy this and you'll be happy and successful and all those things, we're bombarded by messages targeted to us on our phones and every single device, encouraging us to spend money and telling us that we need to because we're not good enough in ourselves. And then you combine that with frictionless credit, a frictionless purchasing process, because you can buy all this stuff from your phone, frictionless returns. It's really, really easy to spend money you don't have because your brain is wired for short-term gratification. And we also have another hardwiring feature, which is to push discomfort into the future. So when is a good time to start that training program or sort out that finances or go to my diet? It's in the future. So we have strong evolutionary drives that make it very difficult for us to manage our finances. We have to be shown, we have to be taught. So how many people have been taught to manage finances? How many people have been shown how to manage money, how to invest money? Very, very few. We might have been shown when we were growing up about putting money into piggy banks, but most of the time when we grow up, we copy what the adults are doing. And how many seven-year-olds have seen adults save and invest? Very, very few of them. So we copy the spending behaviors, and that becomes our default behaviors. And so finance itself, on the other hand, has become fairly complex. So in the UK, we've got the disappearance of cash practically. We've had credit for the last 70 years. We don't often get bills. Everything is settled by direct debit, standing orders. With debit cards, stored credit cards, we have Klarna and SIPs and buy now, pay later and all this stuff. It makes it really difficult sometimes to know how much money is going out, where it's going. And it's just really hard for people because they haven't been shown how to manage their finances. So we need to normalize that discussion around managing finances because it's hard. Your brain's not wired for it. You've probably never been shown it. And we have, at the society's level, we have a culture of silence around this. So if you are curious about, you know, should you be doing things better? Or am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? It's very difficult to know where to go. The financial advice industry, the regulated financial advice industry, is very, very scary for a lot of people. There's lots of mis-selling and there's people don't want to look stupid and don't know about fees and stuff. So it's difficult to approach planners and advisors. So where do people go? They don't, or maybe they go online. So managing finances, understanding how to handle money in today's age is hard. Let's be honest about that. We get trapped in shame and guilt because we're not very good at doing things that no one ever showed us how to do.
Then, okay, so this going back to the normalization discussion. So, I mean, when you're paying the people that you're going to normalize the money with, it's always very difficult to have those conversations, right? Like, how do you go about that? How do you start that? Like, do you start with a newsletter? Or like, do you sit down with people and talk to them? Like, do you have any best practices there? I have a couple, so I'll leave them to last because I have, like, I hear this from so many different HR professionals, but I would also love to hear it from you because I also feel like what you're essentially saying is that mental health, like what mental health used to be 10 years ago, that's where we are at with financial well-being, right? Like we're just starting to talk about this and it's going to be normalized after 10 years. But what does it have to give, right? Like what do we have to do? Like what barriers do we have to jump? Sure. So if you can comment a little bit, that would be amazing.
So I guess when I say normalize, I think it just needs to be very clear that if you're not managing your finances well, if you have no debt, no savings, if you find yourself unable to save, it's totally normal. There's nothing wrong with you.
So oh, okay. The message that's what you mean. All right.
That's what I mean about normalizing it. Mm. It's.
I thought it was normalizing to have a discussion around it. That's why I went.
Well, it is, and it has to start with people feeling safe. Otherwise, they get trapped in shame and guilt around the debt that they have, around the fact that they can't support their families, around the difficult choices they have to make. And there's this very kind of libertarian streak. So in financial literacy can be kind of very preachy about, you know, what's so difficult? It's all maths, just separate wants and needs, you know, there's nothing to see here. It's, you know, you're just making bad choices. And I think that's really unfortunate because what what it ignores the fact is that most people's situations are a factor of where they started. No one chooses to be anxious. No one chooses to make bad decisions and financial decisions. No one chooses to be ashamed or guilty around money. So these things happen. So at a broad level, we need to acknowledge that where you start in life and what you've been shown and how you've been helped have a massive effect on where you find yourself. And we need to move this discussion around money away from just numbers to understand the emotional drivers that basically underlie most behaviors, and certainly poor money behaviors or money behaviors. So what that means is then that having debt, financial stress, normalizing that means there's nothing wrong with you. These are things that just happen because of what's going on in the world. No one's choosing to do these things. So the discussion around it is not a reflection of personal failure or personal bad choices. This is just what's going on. So a lot of stuff tends to be kind of focused on spending. You spend too much. You spend too badly. You're not in control of your spending. Shaming. Right now,
even more shaming than
before. More shaming. Most people don't have a spending problem. They have an income problem.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And like, I can totally, now that you say that, I can totally envision this like one-on-one conversation where HR is having with their employees. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to normalize this in the sense that it's that we find ourselves in these situations, and the biggest barrier to change and engagement with finances is shame and guilt. Because when we have shame and guilt, we think there's something wrong with us. And my message to every one of my clients and everybody in my well-being seminars is, there's nothing wrong with you. You're not, you have to live with the consequences of your financial decisions. And there are obviously things that make the future easier and things that make the future harder. But when you start in a position of guilt and shame, it's very, very difficult to move out of it.
So, and here's a man who hears like a lot of people's personal savings and debts, right? Like you're coming from a place that knows these things. So
I'm coming from a place exactly of compassion and non-judgment, because none of that helps. Right now, it doesn't help. And most people find themselves in a situation they find themselves in through no fault of their own. It's not a deliberate choice that they find themselves unable to heat their homes or unable to find enough food. So that's what I mean by normalizing it.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with you. Yes, it's possible you made poor financial choices, but poor choices are based on lack of education, and no one chooses lack of education. If you were never shown how to manage your finances, if you were never shown how to pay down debt, if you were never shown how to avoid scams and all these things that trip us up continuously, then it's not your fault. You have to live with the consequences, but it's not your fault. So we start with compassion and understanding, and then we move forward, because that creates a place of safety for people to talk about things that are hard for them.
So I'll give you an example about this. So there's a study on this, and I will send it to you and to everyone else who just joined and signed up for this. And the study says, if you, like, without spending a dime on this, if you just simply make your financial policy, financial well-being policy, available to all of your employees, whatever, like, it doesn't have to be anything like too detailed, right? Like, what are the dates that we are going to pay you? What are the, like, can you get like upfront payment from us? You know, like all of these like details, if you give them to employees as like a policy upfront, that tends to make people 2.5 times higher than if not. Like, as you said, like clarity, transparency in these in financial matters makes a huge difference. And I'll also come back with a vulnerability example here. So one of our clients, Masafi in the UAE, they actually work with, they're like 80% of their population, employee population, are Indian. So she went back and she wanted to make sure that like financial well-being is a thing that's talked about in their culture. So she actually sat down had one-on-ones with almost everyone within the company. And here's what she found. And I find that fascinating because when she talked to them, she found that it was extremely, and this was like during COVID, obviously, she found that everyone in the company, like of that 80% was sending money back to their families in India. And they were really sad about that, that they weren't too happy about the commissions that they have to pay to the bank. And also, they were also very, they found it very difficult to go to the bank, wait in line, get in there with a mask and wait again, and then finally find someone in front of them. And by then half of the day was gone. So they found it extremely difficult to do this process. And when she found out about this, all she had to do was she simply picked up the phone, called her vendor, like one of the banks that she was working with, negotiated her way through that commission. She made it lower for them. And then she had the teller come in a day after the money's in the bank of the employees. And voila, like the engagement was up, happiness was higher. People had like half of their day given back to them, but like just simply asking a question and actually implementing something that's free with one of their vendors. And it was just so free, like so easy to implement. And as you said, this all starts with that communication, just like asking, yeah. Normalizing, understanding what the issue is at hand. And yeah, simply by those awareness questions.
Yeah, those awareness questions, which are how can we help you right now? And I'll come into some ideas around that. But you can start, as you mentioned, with just generic advice. Schedule some financial well-being talks or some financial education talks. Yeah. You can do signposting to free and independent well-being advice. In the UK, we have Money and Pension Service. Alerting people to the dangers of financial scams, reminding them of the employee benefits, as you mentioned, showing them where they can find information, guidance, podcasts, websites, maybe access to government benefits or support schemes, because you know sometimes it's quite difficult to interact or determine what the government is actually doing. So providing support or even possibly a helpline to help employees negotiate those areas. So for example, we're getting some money back on our bills. Well, that's okay if you are a bill payer, but if you live in somewhere with communal living or somewhere, how do you get the money back from the £400, I think it is, or £600 from the government? That is not necessarily obvious if you don't pay your own bills. I think you also need to recognize that from a company specific that there are certain, depends on your employees, but there are people that need help more than others. Low earners need help more than others. And it doesn't necessarily need to be specifically wage related. You can, for example, have rental deposit schemes or rental subsidies, technology loans, technology subsidies, helping people with healthcare benefits, childcare benefits, flexible working time, paid off for caring responsibilities. Obviously, there's things like season ticket loans, subsidized bikes, public transport subsidies. And then you've got salary advances, interest-free loans to cover fuel expenses, arrears, ability to come to work. If they're, you know, if you're working remotely, ability to come to work so you don't have to heat the house. So those are the kinds of things that you'll find out when you go and talk to the employees. And in the broadest sense, I think making it safe for employees to support their health and their families. So don't make them feel they can't take time off to support a relative and give them time off or support for challenging life situations. So one of the most difficult things or the most stressful things is moving house. People should be given support, right? Moving house, maybe some kind of allowance or, you know, at least time off, extra time off to do that or to support children or to support elderly relatives. So make people feel they don't have to choose between their families and earning money. Give them a little bit of flexibility to be able to support them. to support the people that are important to them, as opposed to having to go, well, if I, you know, if I go to the doctor, then I'm going to lose half a day's work and I can't afford to do that. So give people, you can support people directly through that process.
It doesn't have to be too costly. Like, you don't have to have huge programs, right, to support people. Like, it can have, I mean, a day off still has monetary implications, but not as cash out, right? So
that's right. It doesn't
really make a difference.
It's not as cash out. And in a sense, that benefit is very valuable because it's non-taxed to the employee. And what it's really saying is that we are supporting you in a way that's meaningful to you. It's not organized around what's easy for payroll or anything like that. So, and it's about listening, and it's about showing to people that they're heard. And that's why the power of the asking questions is so important. I think at a minimum, every employee should be given some kind of well-being coaching or some kind of indication around how to go to support. What people who have significant debt issues get trapped, and they don't go for help for many, many years until it gets to a real problem. So stigmatizing that process is really important. So a simple webinar for an hour at some point during the day where people can dial in or just turn up and just be given some broad guidance around what they should be saving, spending, how they can find, engage with the financial system, how they can use comparison websites, tricks and tips around avoiding unnecessary overdraft charges, credit card charges, all those things. There's another vulnerable section of society, which are people with ADHD, because they find engaging with all of these, the financial system, really difficult. And obviously anyone with low educational skills or at least sort of who's never been shown how to engage with the financial system will end up falling foul of some of the simple things that they could be given guidance around avoiding. So money awareness, I think, is a much better way of thinking. Financial literacy sometimes has negative overtones for people. So it's money awareness. Make people, or give them a money awareness course, showing them how they can take control of their financial futures.
That sounds like our business, our change model. We call it, it's in the literature, of course, it's called the ecologic change model. So what you outlined there sounds awfully familiar to that. For those of you who are like interested in organizational change, please, please look up ecological change model. And what you just described here is like a bit about that too. So ecologic change model says, like, don't try to just change the individual, right? Like, try to like take a stab at different parts of the organization. Maybe try it first at the individual level, then go at the maybe manager level, then maybe at the C level, then maybe at the policy level, maybe then at the ecosystem level, where you're also tapping into the vendors and like look at them again. Like we always like look at change through a funnel. So on top of the funnel, there are those people who have no awareness, not ready to change. And when you go further down, you have those people who have awareness, ready to change, and then not ready to change. And then who have awareness and ready to change. And that's where you can really take action. And you just literally perfectly described that, where you would be doing a lot of awareness trainings, like graphic design, like, you know, like all of like blog posts, like webinars. And then at a maybe at the next level, you will be doing some sort of like challenges events, and maybe some sort of gamification. And then at the lowest, you know, at the bottom of the funnel, you will be actually aiming for those people who have awareness and who are ready to change. And for those people, you will be maybe getting like a financial coach, like, as you said, maybe finance coach or a money coach to get them up to speed on their finances. Okay, perfect. Now we have a minute before we close. Any closing remarks before we go to Q&A?
Yeah, I think, thank you again for inviting me. I think it's easiest to wrap up by explaining that the two biggest stressors for humans are uncertainty and lack of control. And that pretty much applies to everybody I've ever worked with around their finances. So making people feel safe at work, safe to raise financial issues, safe to take time out, giving them as much certainty around income and support, and using education or signposting to show them how to manage finances and take control of their financial futures is massively powerful to help, again, with uncertainty and lack of control. And, you know, if you're an organization and an employees feel like they're in crisis, and they also feel that they can come to you and you can support them at this moment of their greatest need, I think that's a very, very powerful statement about an organization. And I think you will find that it's also extremely important. I mean, it's extremely powerful as a demonstration of support, but also employees who are secure in their finances are much better employees, much healthier individuals, and generally much, much more connected to companies. So
thank you so much, Dennis. Good. So we heard from Dennis today that financial well-being is the next maybe mental well-being, that we need to destigmatize it. And in order to destigmatize it, maybe we can start talking about it. And then we can actually, in order to normalize people's situations around their financial problems, money problems, we can start talking about it and start normalizing it, because everybody is having it. As Dennis said, he said, mostly it's not a spending issue, but it's an income issue, as he said. And we also talked about a couple of change functions that we could do in our organizations to start financial well-being programs. So thank you so much, Dennis, for this. This was a lovely 30 minutes. I see no questions. So I would like to finish our podcast or webinar right here. Thank you so much for your time. And we're really looking forward to having another one of these sessions in the upcoming months. Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Melis.
Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye-bye.